Okay, well, welcome to our school advisory committee and for Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. Can't hardly believe it is actually December 2nd. I want to welcome you to this meeting, and I'd love to go around and have people introduce themselves. And Jenna, do you want to kind of work that out since
Sure. I'll call people as the order I see them on my screen,
and okay, if you great. Can
introduce yourself. So Chair O'Brien, would you like to start us off?
Yes. I am Eileen Quiring O'Brien, and I'm the Clark County Council Chair.
Councillor Olson?
About that. Councilor District 2, I'm Julie Olson.
Brian Schlottman.
Hi, everyone. Brian Schlottman, Director of Environmental Public Health as of 2 days ago, but I served on the committee in a different capacity for a little while.
Bridget?
Yes, I'm Bridget McLeman. I'm representing the Neighborhood Association, Clark County. Thank you.
Doug Hood.
Thank you. Doug Hood, Interim Superintendent, Camas School District.
Jackie Van Seest. I'm sorry about pronouncing your name incorrectly.
That's okay. It's Van Seest. And I am the principal at Green Mountain School.
Thank you. Kevin Jolma.
Hi, Kevin Jolma, Executive Director of Facilities and Operations, and my camera doesn't work.
Kylie Sproul. And don't hear Kylie. I'll come back to her in a moment. Leanne Bremer.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leanne Bremer. I'm legal counsel for the Clark County School District. So I've been hired to assist them in updating their capital facilities plans, taking over from the excellent work Marnie Allen at the ESD did. Her plate got a little full, so I'm taking over, and I actually have done this work long time ago in the 90s when Growth Management Act first passed. So it's a full circle for me coming back around and helping the districts in their planning efforts. Good to be here.
Lester Brown.
Yeah, so I'm Les Brown with the Washougal School District. I'm the Director of Communications and Technology, but serve on the Superintendent's Cabinet.
Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Heuer. I'm the Senior Policy Analyst to the County Council.
Mike Nerland.
Hello, Mike Nerland. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning at ESD 112.
Sharon Cruz.
Hi, I'm Sharon Cruz, College of Education, Washington State University, Vancouver.
Steve Marshall.
Hello, everyone. It's great to see some familiar faces out there and meet some new colleagues. I am the superintendent of the Hawkinson School District.
Right, and Mary Elkin.
Hi, I'm Mary Elkin. I'm representing the Vancouver Neighborhood Alliance.
And Oliver.
I am Oliver, representing community planning.
And Jackie Camp.
Hi, I'm Jackie Camp. I work with Oliver and Jenna in community planning, and I'm excited. This is the first meeting I've been on where there's another Jackie that spells the same way. So hi, Jackie.
And then I'm just going to check. Kylie Sproul, can you hear us? Oh, I'm going to unmute you. Let's see if that works. All right, I've unmuted you.
I'm Kyle Sproul from Vancouver Public School.
All right, welcome. Okay, if I missed anyone, please feel free to introduce yourself now. Okay, back to you, Chair.
Okay, well, thank you. I think we need to approve our meeting notes from our last meeting. Guess we, I'd accept a motion for that. If you've had a chance to look at those. Does anybody have a copy of them? And would you like to make a motion to accept them, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
A second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting notes of our last meeting, which took place on Thursday, April the 22nd, 2021. So moving on then, I'm going to have Lindsay Hewer, our legislative, our policy person, update us on legislation.
Lindsay? Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. So I know in years past that it's been good for us to coordinate with the school districts to the extent that we can to say, hey, what are your upcoming legislative priorities? What are the county's upcoming legislative priorities? And are there ways that they're overlapping or things that we can do to help you with yours and vice versa? So this year, of course, we're coming into 2022. It's a 60-day session. We don't anticipate a lot of, you know, budgetary movement, unlike what we do in an odd numbered year. So our priorities really don't overlap a lot with what I would expect to be of interest for the schools. So I'll just highlight them really quickly. The council is still continuing to look at sales tax leakage. We lose about $25 million a year in sales tax revenue, just given our proximity to the state of Oregon. Of course, it doesn't have any sales tax. So continuing as part of the legislature's look at tax funding and how our overall tax structure works, just trying to be part of those conversations in terms of how we can address the sales tax leakage. 179th Street, monitoring that project, and particularly the $50 million that's within the state transportation projected budgets in the future for the I-5 interchange for that project. Vancouver Lake, there's an appropriation that may need to have a modification for the proviso, but the council continues to be interested in Vancouver Lake and the health of the lake and moving forward in ways that we can address that. Although, of course, everybody, no one really has full jurisdiction over that issue. And so that's a certainly a governmental coordination challenge. In addition to those county specific priorities, we're looking overall at things that impact counties across the state, particularly body cams, injured defense funding, those things that don't really have any nexus with the schools. GMA, we're going to continue to monitor GMA legislation. We may see some things in terms of urban density that would impact required density within the unincorporated areas, so particularly like Phillida, Salmon Creek, that would of course impact Vancouver Public Schools if we have increased density in that area. So we're going to monitor that. But I will also note, just in terms of other things that are going on at the county that may be of interest, we are going to be restarting the mental health sales tax grant process internally. And I know in the past, we've coordinated with some entities that have provided mental health and substance abuse services, particularly mental health and behavioral health services within schools. And I want to say it was Evergreen. It was a couple of years ago, but those were annual grants anyway, so they have expired. But that may be of interest to the schools to note that that process will be resuming in 2022 for grants to start January of 2023. So you may see some action, particularly I would anticipate Evergreen and Vancouver Public Schools, the bigger ones. So that's all I have, but I'm happy to answer any questions or certainly would open it up to any of the school folks to say, hey, this is what our legislative priorities are, and we would appreciate the county support if there's anything on that end that you'd like to share.
Does anybody have any either questions, clarification, or interest in legislative items that they'd like to share with us.
Well, I know statewide, it's been a priority over the last several years to have simple majority for bonds. About 8 years ago, the state approved simple majority for levies, and many of those districts that were failing levies at 58-59% were able to pass them. And the next big hurdle is allowing for simple majority for bonds. And I don't know if the county has any position on that or would like some more information from us on that, but I know that is one of the priorities that would kind of overlap all of us.
Your question about what the counties have a position on it.
Yeah.
That the council does have a position on it, we could certainly talk about it. I know I believe it would require a change. I'm not, Lindsay, would it be at the state level or at the county level?
It would be at the state level change. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is, you know, particularly as it pertains to capital bonds and the state funding, the school districts, and they can elaborate more, but the schools are required largely, I mean, there are some caveats to that, but largely required to pass their bonds to access the state capital funding.
Yeah. Okay. So really it hasn't been a point of discussion with our council. And frankly, I'd have to take it up with them to give you any kind of an answer. So,
okay. Yeah, that, you know, if the council would be interested in like a presentation or more information on that, we could certainly provide that for you.
Hey, thank you for that. We may want that in the future, especially if this is something that, you know, our local superintendents and districts would want to move forward with. We'd be very open to that.
Mike, this is Councillor Olson. I know you've been working on this for a while and districts have for a while. Where do you think you are in terms of moving the needle on this topic with the legislature? It probably won't be this session since it's a short session, but how much progress do you think you're making on getting this really heard seriously?
Well, that's a good question. You know, not many people thought we'd be able to get simple majority for levies, but a lot of different groups came together. some groups that oppose each other when it comes to like negotiations and that sort of thing, but came together and there was good momentum. Bonds are a little tougher. I think we're a ways away from that. But, you know, each year it's a priority for us, not only as a region, but statewide, to allow simple majorities for bonds. It's quite a process because you have to get, I think, 2/3 of the legislature to agree. Then it needs to be passed by a vote of the people. But we're going to keep trying. I mean, especially, you know, areas of high growth or areas that need renovation for their schools, older schools, getting that 60% supermajority, it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so we'll keep pushing.
And then one last question. Where does our local delegation stand on this topic? Are they working on behalf of this? Or are they split together on it? Where are they at on it?
Our state legislators?
Yeah.
In our region? And it's a split.
Okay, thank you. Are there other issues that the schools would like to bring up? Okay, I don't see or hear any. I'm going to turn it over then to Oliver. Right, Jenna?
You know, I do have, before we go to Oliver, I do have one, but I think it's going to be brought up at a legislative forum.
Okay.
Tomorrow is that I represent Hawkinson School District. Doug Hood is from the Camas School District. We are two school districts that were, in essence, we were kind of excluded from ESSER relief funds. And those are federal funds that were tapped for basically elementary and secondary educational relief. And they base that, allocation on your free and reduced lunch rate, not necessarily your need for the impacts of COVID. And so Hawkinson Schools, I'll just speak for my district, is that we received about 1/5 of what larger districts received in their allocation. And I need to advocate for some kind of equalization or supplement to that, because we're already kind of falling behind just because of our scale. And then when you have something like that happen and larger districts, adjacent districts are getting $2,200 per student, and we're down around $420 per student, that's going to factor out in a lot of different ways, services, salaries, et cetera. And so that's something that I'll advocate for. I just wanted to make this council aware of that.
Okay, thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. As I introduce myself, Oliver Jacko, Community Planning. What I would do this afternoon is just, I'm sure that the school district are very familiar with House Bill 2243. So I'm just gonna go over that and what the county have done as a way to implement that. House Bill 2243 authorizes the extension of public facilities and utilities to serve a school sited in a rural area that serves students from both rural area and urban growth area, subject to certain requirements. Now, this bill, after passage in 2017, was codified into RCW 3678-213, and that's where you will find the certain requirement portion of the bill. If I may quickly, there are 5 requirements that has to be met. There is no priority. A suggests that a school board has to adopt a policy addressing school service area and facility needs and educational program requirements. B says that there has to be a finding with the concurrency of the county legislative authority or the legislative authority of any affected city that this district proposed site is suitable to site the school and associated recreational facilities that the district has determined cannot reasonably be co-located to an existing school site. And then C says that the counties and affected city agree to the extension of the public facility to serve the school. D focuses on finding a nexus in terms of the cost associated with the extension of the sewer line, if you will. And E talks about, you know, if there is a need or potential environmental impact that needs to be addressed or mitigated. I'm glad to see Liam Bremer back supporting the school district. So I'm sure that if any of the school district wants to site a school in the rural area to serve both urban and rural students, we are going to be working with her to facilitate that effort. There are other provisions here. I'm not gonna bore you with that, but it talks about the fact that in siting a school in the rural area, the sewer provider and the legislative authority will have to agree that site will have to be served for the school. And in addition, that additional properties may be tied to that particular line, but there have to be some kind of a cost that the school district, I believe is item number 3, requiring some reimbursement from a requesting property owner for a proportional share of the construction costs incurred by the school district for the extension of the sewer line. So that is one of the things that have to be negotiated if and when a school is sited in the rural area and the school district pays for the cost. So those are some of the, those are the summary of the requirement. There is also a provision in as codified in section 213 that by December 1st, 2023, it says the department, I take it means Washington's Department of Commerce, shall report to the governor and the appropriate committees, you know, if there have been any school built under this provision, and you know, how many location characteristics of the school and the number of urban and rural students served, and the cost analysis of schools built outside urban growth boundaries. Those are the summaries and the requirement as codified in section 213. Since the passage of the bill, county staff and with the support of our council amended our code section 40370010 by ordinance that was adopted in 2020-03-08, which amended that sewer regulation exception. And the language is very, that the council approved is very similar to the language that is codified in 213. It basically says that, yeah, under this provision, schools now can be located in both, at least in the rural area, to serve both urban and rural students. So, and also emphasize the need for both the sewer providers and the authorizing legislative body, whether it's a city or county, to agree on which areas will be served in the future. So that is codified in our code now, section 40370010. Next slide. The other issue I want to bring to your attention is that in the past, we have worked in collaboration with the school districts, working with Manny Allen, and now in the future going forward, working with Liam Bremer. And that coordination during our periodic plan update, what I need to say here is that the next date for us to complete the next periodic review is June 30th, 2025. The start date, and I have a question mark here, the start date, we don't know yet, because we are waiting for the State Office of Financial Management to release a population forecast for planning purposes. That I'm anticipating, I don't know. But because the census was released very late, that is delaying when their forecast will be provided. But I'm anticipating it could come out in late fall or sooner. As soon as that is with us, we will the discussion of having a conversation with our council on what population to plan for. That is very going to be very key. And the other issue is that as part of that release, we do get information on student age grade in anticipation of over the next 20 years. And that is very helpful to the school district. So we will be coordinating as we get that population forecast with the school district. The other issue is that we have a school chapter, and schools, as you know, is not mandated as one of those chapters that we have to have. The county chose to have a school chapter in coordination with the school districts. So I'm anticipating that as we go through the next periodic review, that the school district would like to review that school chapter and maybe update it or help us update it depending on what you would like to see. In that, some school districts have also submit their capital facilities plan. You are not required, but often we ask for 20-year forecast, but you are required to show how you're going to bid for the first 6 years of your capital facilities plan, and then the associated school impact fees. So all this work we anticipate will happen when we begin the next periodic review. Next slide. Oh, did I miss any slide, Jenna?
No, I think that was all of them.
Oh, okay. So I will stop there, and if you have questions, let me know. I know we are currently working with Liam Bremer, who will be helping us to update 6 school districts in 2022, their CFP and the attendant impact fee. So I'm not going to bore you with those. So I will stop and take questions that you may have.
Oliver, can I just add, this is Liam Bremer. Yeah, so that was a great summary, and that is the process. I just want to let folks know that there are 6 school districts with updates due next year. And we're shooting for, you know, early spring to get some drafts to the county and start reviewing those and go through that process of adoption, and then working with the cities that are affected as well. So we've launched that effort. The school districts are going through their enrollment projections, you know, getting folks on board to help them do that and their facilities needs. And I expect that part of that analysis for facilities will include perhaps some rural sites that you mentioned, Oliver, that's allowed to be served by urban services. So I'm sure we'll be looking at that closely. I do have a question about that. There is that 5-part test in the statute that would allow urban services to serve rural sites. Do you anticipate that the case for that and the county's concurrence on that takes place in when they adopt the capital facilities plan, or is it some other process or documentation that would authorize those sites?
I think, you know, an application, and if that's, you know, remember, if I may, the first requirement, and you can, I know you have access to this as codified in 3670A, the first requirement is that the school board adopt a policy addressing school service area and facility needs, which is your 6 years. And with that, if a school is going to be sited in a rural area to serve both rural and urban, that is going to be included in your capital facilities plan. When you come in then for actual application, that's when the issue about extension of sewer and the sewer providers is going to kick in.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. And then
that's what I suspect. Yeah, that's what I suspect will happen.
Okay, I'll give that some more thought. Yeah, we'll be interested in the population forecast you received from OFM. I didn't realize that might have some useful information for the school districts too. So we'll look for that. And then when I addressed the council in June, we brought up the issue of perhaps the school districts getting on a 6-year interval update schedule. It seemed like there was some support for that at the council level, but that's something that we may want to pursue as well, instead of being on a 4-year schedule. I don't see the 4 years required in state law. I think that's a county rule. So we'll want to look at that too.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I think the request to go to used to be yearly, but I think the request to go to 4 was at the request of the school district. You're correct. It could go to 6. The only thing that the council will have to consider is because your CFP is associated with your school impact fees, whatever the rate is, that's going to be in place for 6 years. So until amended. So that's a policy call the council will have to examine and see if they want to do that. I don't know, but I can speak for the council, but that issue is going to come up when you update on a 6-year cycle, depending on whatever the fee may be. Would you want that to remain in place for 6 years until expand again? Which is a similar argument to some folks who are saying, why not you update when you update your periodic plan update? Same issue, but I will leave it up to the council to tomorrow and to chew on.
Okay, all right. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? And again, thank you for inviting me.
Are there any other questions of Oliver? I would just say to the question, Leanne, I don't know what this echo is about, but it's irritating. your question about the 6-year plan, you'd really have to discuss this with other districts to find out if that really is what they want. With regard to how Oliver answered it, you may not want to go 6 years. So
yes. Yeah, that was good information.
Yeah. Right. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you, Oliver, so much for that update.
Yeah, thank you, Leanne. Madam Chair, if I may, I will encourage Leanne to take a look at this House bill and then the codification that is in Section 213, and really have a conversation with the school district, because this is an opportunity, but there are also some caveats. So take a look at that and have that conversation with the school district before we even begin the conversation. If you want to amend, as I indicated earlier, put some policies in place, that will also be very helpful. So when adopted, you will be following that policy as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions of Oliver, we decided to ask if there were any other issues that the school districts would like to bring up at this meeting. So I'll open it up for any other items for discussion if you have any. Well, silence sometimes is golden. Hopefully that's a good thing. yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be curious based on Lindsay's report about the mental health sales tax and the process there, if any of the districts have an interest or are interested in learning more about that, or kind of what the general overall mental health is with students, given where we are with the pandemic, and just curious if there's any feedback on that we might be able to respond to.
I guess that's good. Silence is golden here, sure. Thanks. Okay, I'm gonna turn it over to you, Jenna, to wrap up.
Okay. Well, thank you all again for joining us. One thing we wanted to just check in with you all as we're approaching the end of the year is to check in about this forum and if you are still finding it useful. I think over the past few years, it's been working that we've had 2 meetings a year, you know, with the spring one focused on development and this fall one primarily focused on legislative priorities. So, you know, if just wants an opportunity for any feedback on, is it still useful? Is the number of meetings and topics of the meetings, you know, are they the right ones? So just want to pause and check to see if anyone has any feedback on that.
I think fall meeting or winter meeting and spring meeting is appropriate.
I would agree. And can we circle back to that mental health question real quick? I just want to clarify, was the question about what are we seeing in the schools as far as mental health or social emotional issues? And we're seeing a big increase across our region in mental health challenges with students, behavior issues that have increased. And ESU 112, we actually received our mental health license. So we're an actual licensed provider and received some funding from the state to provide embedded mental health specialists in several of our districts, although it's not all. But there is certainly a need for more embedded mental health counselors, therapists in schools that are part of the school community. So they get to know the teachers, they get to know the students, they get to know the families of those students as well. And so it's something that, you know, we're all experiencing, not just in Washington, but throughout the United States with COVID, and then kids coming back after being out so long, and you know, everything kind of ties into that. So yeah, it's something that we need to continue to focus on and expand services.
Mike, I would, if you haven't, I would encourage you to reach out to Lindsay. And, you know, if the ESD is a source of a grant recipient, and then also able to put these folks in schools, that there may be an opportunity that we can help support that through this fund.
That'd be great. I definitely will. I'll reach out to her. Thank you.
You bet.
Yes, yeah, please do. And same for anybody else. The applications will probably open late spring, like around April, and be due around June. And then the funding would begin January of 2023. So as long as it falls within mental health, behavioral health, or substance abuse related to mental health and behavioral health, it qualifies for use of the tax. And so that's definitely something that I know the council's been interested in doing. And so, yeah, I would certainly welcome the grant application.
Thank you.
Okay, I think the only other thing I had was to just, it sounded like there was some support to continue sort of with the pattern we've been using for this group with twice a year meetings. So if that is the case, then we'll work on scheduling the next one for sometime in the spring. And that would be when we next meet. So I think that's all I had.
Okay, is there anything else for the good of the order? Thank you all for taking the time today. It's a big group, and we appreciate everybody working with their schedule to get together just to get these updates. So we appreciate the updates from you as far as knowing what's coming, and hopefully it was very useful to you as well to get our updates from our planning department. So with that, if there is nothing else, I will adjourn. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.